Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. You don't have to look far or wide to learn how rich the USA can be via its landmarks. New PBS series Iconic America, coming Wednesday night, can be your guide. Producer Joshua Bennett will be our guide when he joins me next. FBI True is Paramount Plus's exploration of unique investigations over the Bureau's existence. Ann Vegan, the former FBI special agent on board as an executive producer, connects with us next half hour. Also ahead, a batch of TV departures on the fly. We've got the breaking details. Walt Disney's next layoff round, which has already begun. We've got breaking details on that. Our classic trivia question, and one last 10 for Len Goodman. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thank you for joining us on this Monday afternoon for the first of 4 episodes this week of the program All About TV's Current and Future. 59 degrees top of the hour here in New York. I hope you'll be with us today, tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday at this hour. We promise you some wonderful guests along the way. Tell your friends to tune in and be part of the program as well. It's going to be amazing. You'll hear more about what we've got coming your way tomorrow, 90-minute episode. Friday also, we just lined up our first guest for that a little bit later on in the program. As far as this program is concerned, we want you involved with our guests. So give us a call and use this number when you do, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And while you're at it, join our chat room, Simon Apple 04. My name, our super fan from Philadelphia, Rick Webb, is already in the room. So join him as well. All you have to do is go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, get into the chat room, and put your questions or thoughts there. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio speaker, tune in screen, follow the instructions, and other people will be live with you. We're expecting Joshua Bennett from Iconic America to be live with us after these news notes. The last 24 hours have been full of on- and off-camera departures impacting the TV medium. In the on-camera realm, two notable cable news talents are out of their respective all-news channels. Late this morning, Fox News Channel announced that lead primetime host and commentator Tucker Carlson's tenure there is over. Carlson's nightly series, Tucker Carlson Tonight, will be temporarily replaced by Fox News Tonight with rotating hosts. Carlson has not offered any comment over his exit at this hour. However, some sources insist this is not, repeat, not an outcome of Fox News' settlement of the Dominion lawsuit last week. It's not clear what will happen to Carlson's production team or his upcoming original documentaries on Fox Nation. And then early this afternoon, CNN anchor person Don Lemon used a social media post to disclose the network's decision to fire him. Lemon learned of the decision through his agent minutes after today's CNN morning presentation. At this point, there's no plans to replace Lemon on that program. As for executive suite moves off camera, NBC Universal announced late yesterday that Jeff Shell is no longer the chief executive officer. Reason? Shell conceding that he had an inappropriate relationship with a female employee. One published report suggests that employee was a CNBC anchor reporter based overseas. CNBC did not confirm that report when discussing Shell's ouster during its Spoke on the Street program this morning. Comcast President Mike Cavanaugh will assume Shell's role for the short term and maybe for the long term. According to one published report that was in some of the entertainment trades a couple of hours ago, Cavanaugh may end up being the long-term permanent replacement for Shell while he will remain president of Comcast Cable. Also, and separately, Chicken Soup for the Soul's entertainment president Jonathan Katz, who started that job last August, will step down. He will remain there a few more weeks as a senior advisor. Chicken Soup operates mega content service Crackle and Crackle Plus and an ad-supported channel featuring unscripted and empowering content. Before taking on the Chicken Soup role last August, Katz was the person who put together Bounce TV and the other networks, cable, multicast, etc., offered through Scripps Networks, and then before that was an executive with Turner Broadcasting. And that is the latest on all the departures that have been happening over the last 24 hours. In case you don't know, this is a very critical week for Walt Disney, because by the end of this week, Disney is expected to lay off and fire more than 4,000 employees in a cost-cutting move, the second phase of a three-phase effort that will end early this summer. We understand that a lot of the layoffs that will be happening will be taking place with ESPN, ABC, and other Disney television divisions. We can tell you right now that the layoffs have started ESPN, and one of the first to go is longtime PR chief Mike Solsis. I've known Mike for many, many years. He's one of the very, very best in the profession, sports, TV, or otherwise. And we understand that according to the Wrap, he is one of the first employees to go at ESPN. We are expecting more announcements before the end of the day and certainly throughout the week. We'll have more about the ESPN layoffs Thursday morning on Sports Newswire, where I'll be doing my TV sports segment this week. Sports Newswire running Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on Sports Grid Network, available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. If we have more details on the Disney layoffs, whether it's from ESPN, ABC, or whatever, we'll pass them to you before our episode is over. And any breaking developments after that, we'll have them for you on tomorrow's episode at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. And we will have News No Quickies later on in today's program. All right. We are expecting Joshua Bennett, the producer of Iconic America, the new series hosted by David Rubenstein, was premiering on many PBS stations this Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Joshua, if you can hear me, give us a call, 646-652-2906. And as soon as I hear the radio, see on my computer screen that you're ready and ready and going to get on the air, we'll get you on as soon as possible. In the meantime, let's continue. Tell you what we'll do. We'll do our classic trivia question, which we're going to do in the second half hour. Let's do it now. We are looking for our second weekly winner in 3 weeks. And if you are first with the correct answer, when we pose the question, you'll win the brand new book, Retroactive Television, an in-depth perspective on classic TV's social circuitry. That is published by Headline Books. Wonderful book, by the way. Let's give you the question, and then we will go live to Joshua Bennett. The question is this. Name the 1978 NBC miniseries co-starring Richard Chamberlain, Robert Conrad, Sally Cullen, and David Janssen. Name the 1978 NBC miniseries co-starring Robert Conrad, Richard Chamberlain, David Janssen, and Sally Kellerman. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first with the correct answer, you win. If you're a previous winner or a guest on this program, you are not eligible. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question tomorrow on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. And again, if you want to catch the interview that we did with Herbie Pilato about a month ago, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Go to our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com, and on Podium, or go to any of our podcast ventures. And we will repeat the question. If you just came in, we will repeat the question in our second half hour. Now joining us live is the producer of the new PBS series, Iconic America, Joshua Bennett. And we should be getting him any second.
Hi, how are you doing?
Yes,
so much
here he is right
me.
Now. Joshua, welcome in.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
You are very welcome, Joshua. Where are you calling from? What city?
I'm actually in New York, New York City.
Ah, great to have you in the Big Apple at this hour. And Joshua, tell us about Iconic America and how you got involved in producing it.
Sure. Well, I work with Show of Force. We're a television company. We have produced series for HBO, PBS, Hulu, on and on. We've done many series with PBS over the years, and we were contacted by WIDA, PBS station, and they were having conversations about trying to tell a new history series. And David Rubenstein was very interested in history and had written several books, and they were talking about how could they take these books that were talking about American history and the American experience. And could we develop and figure out a television series that would sort of take off from where the books had sort of left readers? I think the first book was called Creating the American Story, and he went on to do a trilogy of books. And so we worked for several weeks, a few months, sort of developing different concepts and ideas for a show. And then we sort of landed on the idea of iconic symbols and objects that as Americans, all hold meaning and value for us, things like the Statue of Liberty or, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge, iconic symbols that we associate with our American history. And we thought, let's tell the story of those symbols and through that tell a new story about American history and hear from new voices and get new perspectives on history that maybe we thought we knew or were taught in school, but actually is much richer and much more interesting maybe than what we remember.
The deeper you went into each subject, whether it's the Golden Gate Bridge or the Statue of Liberty or a certain genre person, the American cowboy, which is in one of the episodes, what did
yes.
you discover that made the symbol fresh as an iconic part of American of Americana?
Well, I think, I mean, each episode is very different, and it sort of gives you a sort of a history, but then also just this diversity of perspectives and points of view on the object. For instance, the cowboy episode, I think we have one picture in our mind of a cowboy as sort of this, you know, predominantly white, very hyper-masculine, sort of loner, kind of on the frontiers, fighting for justice and, you know, the association of sort of a gunfighter. But the true story of cowboys is much richer, and it's actually much more diverse. And cowboys were African American. They came from Latin America. They were white as well, but they were from all walks of life and so many different backgrounds. And cowboys were these workers who really sort of through their work kind of built the infrastructure of the American West. And so there's a bigger, richer story there. And a lot of women who rode in the rodeos, the cowboys, a lot of things that just give you this deeper picture of the real history and sort of how maybe the myth that we tell ourselves of that history in some ways is accurate, but also in their surprising other dimensions that maybe have not been fully explored in history books or other programs. So I think going across the country, finding experts who could really speak to these points from these different perspectives, it just constantly rewarded us with new stories and new aspects of these icons that we ourselves weren't familiar with, and I don't think a lot of viewers might be.
We're talking about Iconic America. It's the new PBS series that's airing on many PBS stations this Wednesday night. That's April 26, 10 p.m. East Pacific time. In some markets, you will see the show later in the week, and some you will see a replay over the weekend. So check your local listings out for the PBS station in your area, but when they are playing it. We're talking to the producer of the program, Joshua Bennett. He joins me here in the Big Apple this half hour on Swappy Televised as we're kicking off a week with four. That's not incorrect. Four, not three, not two, four live episodes this week, today, tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday at this very hour. Tom Abbott with you live from New York. 59 degrees at the top of the hour. We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Big night in the edition coming your way tomorrow. We're going to kick it off with Emmy Award-winning producer Tom Jennings. His latest work, it's a special on National Geographic and premieres this Friday night, Charles in His Own Words. Then we'll talk to the president and chief executive officer of CuriosityStream. It started as one channel. Now it is a nonfiction empire. Clint Stinchcomb will be with us. And we're announcing this today. Our third guest will be the Emmy-nominated executive producer and director from The Flight Attendant, Susanna Fogle. Her latest project, the brand new Disney Plus, Hulu, and National Geographic miniseries, A Small Life. It's the Diary of Anne Frank tale you don't know about. And I've seen some clips of it. It may be considered one of the best miniseries of the year, and it's got a breakout performance and very well could be an Emmy-nominated one. Susanna Fogle from A Small Life, which premieres May 1st on Nat Geo, Disney Plus, and Hulu. She'll be with us live. That's all tomorrow, 90-day edition of Swampy Televised, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Joshua, how were the iconic American landmarks or symbols, how were they picked? And then once you picked them, in which order did you actually film or tape the proceedings?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, there's obviously so many different icons and symbols. When you start to really kind of look at American history, the list is quite long. I mean, you could sort of count off on your hand right up the top of your head a number like the Lincoln Memorial or the Washington Monument. But we wanted to, I think, find a range of objects, both big sort of symbols that we're all familiar with, like, you know, big statue like the Statue of Liberty. We also wanted to look for ideas, as you said, about like the cowboy, these figures that are sort of cultural icons in the country. And then also looking at things that might be considered like a little more non-physical or ethereal, like the one episode on the Gadsden flag and like the flag, the Don't Tread on Me flag, that symbol of a flag, what it means to different people, how that meaning has evolved over the decades and sort of what it says about where we are right now culturally as a country. I think in doing it, we wanted to find a mix of popular icons, things that sort of give you this sort of exciting, sort of a feel-good look at America, while also sort of peeling away sort of like the onion layers of maybe the story that you didn't know. So like we focus on the Hollywood sign, and there's a lot of, you know, wonderful, fun stories about Hollywood, but also we explore the creation of Hollywood itself and also raise questions about Hollywood struggling with race and struggling with equality, but also Hollywood as this amazing engine of creativity in America and where that all came from. Or, for instance, we talk about Stone Mountain, and we have that episode sort of, we use it as a vehicle to talk about monuments and representation and what's been happening with sort of a lot of the old Confederate monuments being taken down and sort of questions around what do we celebrate in our public spaces and what statues should remain, what should go. So, you know, each of these, I think, episodes was really a vehicle to tell a larger story. So the Golden Gate Bridge, for instance, is about infrastructure. So it was sort of a process of saying, what are eight objects or eight icons that can sort of lead us into this specific story, but also tell a bigger story about America.
How much time was spent filming or taping at each location and interviewing experts associated with each location?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, we really traveled the country. I mean, for instance, the cowboy episode, there's not really one single place you could tell that story. We went to film rodeos in Arizona and Wyoming, but then we went to Texas and to Oklahoma. We did an episode on the bald eagle, and that took us all the way out to Alaska and then down to Florida and then to upstate New York and even to Central Park, where there was eagles flying around over the last couple of years, quite famous eagle, actually. So, you know, we would spend several days in each location. I mean, Alaska, it took practically 2 days to get all the way out to Haines, Alaska, where there's the biggest concentration of bald eagles. And we spend time there meeting experts, filming the wildlife, traveling with David, really having this experience of dropping into this world. In the same way, for the episode on the Statue of Liberty, we were able to go inside the statue and go to the place where immigrants to Ellis Island lived that is not really a publicly accessible place. And it was really amazing because we went into this space and there was still the piano that immigrants played at the turn of the 20th century, still standing there. And you could see some remnants of old beds and just feelings of the people who had passed through this place. So it varied depending on the icon and the location, but we were there. I think overall the series, we must have filmed like probably close to 100 days of filming in all over the country.
What was it like working with David Rubenstein? What kind of a person is he, and how fascinated is he by the subject matter?
Well, David was a surprise to us all. I think he's very approachable and very humble. I mean, I think when we think of David Rubenstein, we think of all of his work with the Carlyle Group and all of his charitable donations over the year, the Kennedy Center. You know, he's done quite a bit and traveled and is a very influential person, but he genuinely loves history and he's got a natural curiosity and he's really funny and he's got sort of that timing that I think, you know, you're born with it. You don't sort of learn it. And so he's always kind of quick to, you know, with a joke or with some insight that comes forward. And he was fun and he's very curious. I mean, anytime he'd meet a new member of the team, he'd be very curious about them. He'd speak with them in a way that, you know, a lot of people, a lot of talent, when you're at that level, they're not really that interested in the people behind the camera so much. So it was really a pleasure to work with him. We were all, you know, we really enjoyed our time with him and he was very easy to work with too. I mean, that's another thing in this business, you know, you sometimes find people who, you know, they're a lot to work with, but he made everything really easy and he was game for whatever we wanted to do, whether it was walking across the Golden Gate Bridge, you know, with 5 o'clock traffic or, you know, going all the way out to Haines, Alaska to look for eagles in the muddy rivers of Haines. So, you know, he was a real sport, I guess you could say, and he's a deep student of history. He genuinely loves history. He feels that preserving and understanding and knowing American history is really vital to our future as a country. And so, you know, he's the genuine article for that.
Mm-hmm. We should point out that Iconic America is produced through WETA, that's the main public television station in the Washington, D.C. area, and that funding for the program is provided by the Zohar and Lisa Bendov family through the Luminescence Foundation. And Iconic America premieres this Wednesday night on many PBS stations at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Remember to check your locally tonight for the PBS station in your area, but also for when they run it, because some will run it later on or earlier in the evening on Wednesday. Some will run it later in the week. Some will also have a second run. By the way, the promo will also be running on PBS.org and the PBS app. Joshua Bennett is the producer of the program. He joins us live here in Nueva York this half hour on Smart Be Televised. Tom App, I'm with you also in the Big Apple. Happy to have you with us. 60 degrees approaching the bottom of the hour. Gorgeous day outside. We've got nice, blue, cloudy, wonderful skies. And if you have a question or comment on any of this with Joshua, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. It is that time again, time for the biggest TV festival in the land. That is Series Fest out of Denver. And Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will have our annual conversation with the co-founder and chief executive, Randy Kleiner. Bigger and better than ever, more than 50 independent series pilots in competition, lots of special, unique panels, and Randy will tell us all about it. That's Randy Kleiner from Series Fest, live with us Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. One of the other things interesting about your program is you have a very good composer, Gary Leonetti, doing your score. What marching orders did you give him about how the music should tailor and be complementary to...
Sure. I mean, Gary Leonetti is an amazing composer. I mean, he's done a few different films for us. He did a big film we did on the global refugee crisis in 2016. It was called Sky and Ground, and he did a fantastic job on that. And so for this series, you know, we wanted Gary to sort of reference some of the kind of sounds that we associate with America and patriotism, you know, whether, you know, it's sort of those strands of like the trumpets playing taps or the kind of the grandeur of like the national anthem or America the Beautiful. You know, let's find those sounds, but then let's also add in new elements and new textures to the music so that it sort of brings you into the present, and it gives you a sense that we're not just revisiting history and sort of playing sort of period music or stuff that would sort of feel like it's of that era, but rather let's use elements of the music from that era combined with modern sounding soundscapes and create something that felt fresh and different. And Gary was game for that. And, you know, he's got such a deep web, a deep history of musical knowledge and expertise, and he's a fantastic writer and musician. So, you know, he was very, very easy to work with and jumped on board and was excited and did a fantastic job.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I heard that Gary was composing this, it reminded me of an anecdote that's in the wonderful book, TV's Greatest Hits. It was all about the history of TV music by John Burlingame, who is still one of the key columnists of Variety, and involves the music for The Defenders. Remember that great TV series in the 1960s with E.G. Marshall and Robert Reed, produced in New York? Leonard Rosenman, the brilliant, groundbreaking film and TV composer, wrote the theme for that. And he was already asked by Herbert Brodkin, the producer, and his team, write something, a theme that represents the law. And Rosenman answered back, I can't do that. Music cannot represent an idea. It has to represent a symbol. So, for example, when you have, let's say, if my music complements the scene of a courthouse, which is exactly what was part of the scene in The Defenders, you will think of the law. So you will think of my music as symbolic with the law, not ideal of the law. And I'm wondering if Gary had that similar kind of challenge when composing the music.
I think it's a great insight and a great point. I think that Gary definitely was sort of always conscious of let's reach beyond, you know, what might be the easy expectation of what to do with the music and what might people might be more familiar with, and let's try to do something different, because I think music, you know, to your point, it sort of takes on sort of the shape and the meaning connected to some context, and it can have so many different sort of lives beyond just the screen and the picture, which is why we're also, Gary's music is up on Spotify for the series. If people want to just go ahead and go there and listen to it, they can find it, I think, under Gary Leonelli's Spotify account or by looking up Iconic America playlists on Spotify. But I think that at the end of the day, music tells a story, but it sort of does it in a way where it's not trying, like what he's so great at is he's not trying to drive the story or milk it too much or kind of push viewers with the music, but rather the music sort of moves the story along in a very elegant, subtle way where you get these sort of feelings coming from the music, but it leaves enough sort of space for you to sort of form your own interpretation and meaning of what you're seeing on screen. And I think great composers, they really know how to walk that line.
Mm-hmm. One of the episodes may be the most controversial, and it deals with Stone Mountain, because it deals with a subject that is very touchy for a lot of people one way or the other, and that is the recent history of taking down statues, sometimes in a very destructive manner. There are a lot of people who think, no, you shouldn't take down Confederate statues because we need to show people the history, good or bad. Some say, no, we have to take the statues down for a similar kind of reason. How did this episode deal with that controversy?
Well, it was a challenging episode. You're right. And, you know, we have a great team. Sam Pollard was the senior producer on this episode. And I also want to shout out my other executive producers, Jeffrey Dupre and Mara Chumayev, the founders of Show of Force, and also Christopher Ullman, who works closely with David. This was an episode that we all wrestled with because we knew that it's sort of one of those third rail topics and people feel very strongly about sort of taking down the monuments. And I think what was, I think, important about the episode was that in telling the story of Stone Mountain, through that story, you sort of learn more about the origin of the Ku Klux Klan, and you realize how pervasive it was in the United States at this time, and to the extent that even some of the planners and developers of Stone Mountain were former Klan members. But the fact that then, you know, when it's unveiled in the 70s, you have the vice president of the time, Spiro Agnew, there at the unveiling ceremony, it just shows you how far we've come in this conversation about racism and the legacy of slavery in this country. So I sort of feel like, you know, that it summed up, in I think, in a good way when we were interviewing Representative James Clyburn. And, you know, you have to reckon and you have to confront this history, but I think we also have to be aware, like, for instance, in the Hall of Congress, there's a Hall of Statues where it has former statesmen and women and former presidents, statues of all of these great Americans. But in that room is also a statue of Jefferson Davis, former head of the Confederacy at the time. And you have to ask yourself, in this hallway honoring these great American figures, why is there a statue of somebody whose main goal in life was to break apart the United States Union because of his support of slavery? So that, I think, raises the question, well, is that really right? Is that sending the right message? Is that really what we want to be doing, enshrining these problematic historical figures in ways that maybe glosses over the full extent of the wrongs that they did and the things that the negative impact that had? So I think in that case, yeah, that statue probably shouldn't be there. Maybe there's a place for it, but in the context of understanding what that person, who they were, what they represented, and the problematic parts of that. So I think that's an ongoing conversation, but I felt like he sort of captured it the right way. You know, you can put the statue up, but don't put it in a hallway honoring heroes. Put it in a place where you're forced to confront the history in a sort of meaningful way.
We have about 30 seconds left. Is there a particular symbol or landmark that you couldn't get in that if you and David get a second season with this, you will get in?
I don't know if I can say for public, but you know, one of the episodes, of course, we'd love to do the White House, and I think it was just a matter of scheduling. Obviously, that's a pretty busy place. But I think there's such a great story there, from the Resolute desk, the desk that many presidents use, to the story of the White House itself. So that would be top of the list. But we have a long list for season two and beyond, so we're very excited about that possibility.
The premiere episode of Iconic America, Our Symbols and Stories with David Rubenstein, premieres this Wednesday night on many PBS stations, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Check your local listings for the PBS station in the area and also when they run the program. Some will run it at that hour. Some will run earlier that night. Some will run later in the week. And others will have a second replay over the weekend. For more details about the program online, go to pbs.org. It will also be playing on the PBS app, which is someplace available on smart TV sets and smart devices. And again, it's Iconic America, premiering this Wednesday night, April 26th, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on PBS, distributed through WETA, the major PBS station in Washington, D.C. Joshua Bennett, the producer of the program, thank you again for joining us. Good luck with you and everybody, David, on the show, and hopefully Wednesday night, the beginning of a wonderful run.
Thank you so much, Simon. It was a real pleasure. Thank you for taking the time. We enjoyed it.
A pleasure. All the way, David. Take care. Enjoy the week. Joshua, enjoy the week. You and David, enjoy the week.
You too. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Take care. Joshua Bennett, producer of Iconic America, joining us live from New York. When we come back, a former FBI special agent now runs her own production company, and she has got a hit series on Paramount Plus called FBI True. Ann Beegan will join us live from Beverly Hills, California. Plus, topic trivia question of the week. We'll have a show to know coming up in the final half hour, a program that we first told you about a year ago, January. It came back on HBO last night, and our tribute to former Dancing with the Stars judge Len Goodman, who passed away over the weekend at the age of 78. That's all coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com, together reaching over 80 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out the Miracle Man Show, an entertaining program for you today, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised, first of four episodes we are doing this week of the program about TV's current and future. Simon, I'm with you live from New York, 60 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Let's hear from you in the hour ahead. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Our second guest today is a former FBI special agent who decided that after leaving the Bureau to have a different kind of career, launching her own TV production company. And it's in that vein, she now has a hit series on Paramount Plus, the mega content service called FBI True, which earlier this month started its second season of episodes. And that's not only the only way that she is involved in television, as you will soon hear. Joining us live from Beverly Hills, California, the head of her own production company and executive producer of FBI True, Ann Beegan. Ann, welcome in.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you. Before we get into FBI True, why did you decide, being one of the youngest, if not the youngest FBI special agent around, decide that when you left the Bureau, you're going to go into television as opposed to another career?
That's a great question, Simon. The last 12 years of my 23-year career in the Bureau, I worked in the press office in an entertainment liaison position that I created when I saw that there was a disconnect between what the entertainment industry thought the Bureau did and how they depicted the Bureau in television and film. So I created a position that allowed me to work with the industry from the FBI side to make stories more authentic. So when I was reaching the end of my career on the success of what I had done in that position in the Bureau, I saw an opportunity to take my experience and really bring it into the private sector in a more meaningful way.
When you were at the Bureau in that office, did you work on dramatic shows like Today's FBI with Mike Connors or Mancuso FBI and some of the other shows that the broadcast networks and some cable networks were doing that had an FBI focus?
Yeah, I worked on dozens of TV shows, movies. I worked on The Wolf of Wall Street and The Irishman with Martin Scorsese. I worked with Imagine Entertainment on Tower Heist. I worked on magazine articles and books, and probably the most meaningful contribution that I had was in 2015 when I realized there was no good network show about the Bureau. And I contacted my very good friend Dick Wolf with my idea to create a series, and together we sold that to CBS, and that really fueled me to know that, you know, the contribution that I made was a game changer, and I thought I could really have a more meaningful contribution going forward.
When you approached Dick Wolf with your idea for an FBI series, did you or Dick ever think that it would grow to the point where it has now become a night of programming on CBS, three separate series, all shot in New York?
Well, certainly. I mean, that was the impetus for my bringing it to him. Not only was he a good friend, but he was so prolific. He is so prolific, of course, in the network procedural space. And when we had our meeting with Director Comey in the inner sanctum of the FBI director's office, it was truly a pinch-me moment. Most agents who work on the same floor of the same building have never even been back there. And we decided that we were going to collaborate on this show. I took Dick on a private tour of kind of a museum that the Bureau has that you can't publicly access, and highlighted for him the Most Wanted program and the international story of the Bureau, both of which were prominently depicted in the museum. And we talked about this could be a franchise that we're building. So it was all kind of born together. And it's really exciting to see that there's now a franchise about the FBI and network television. It's just such an honor to have been part of that.
Well, do you still watch episodes of FBI or Most Wanted or National? And what do you think about how those shows evolved over multiple seasons?
I think they're great. I love that there's a huge following and that people are really responding to them. And I love that there are more shows popping up about the FBI, which is very exciting, of course. And it just makes me feel validated that I felt I could move into this producing career, act two, I guess I call it, with these undeniable stories, many of which people have never heard before.
Yeah. We've had the opportunity over the years on this program to have some of Dick Wolf's producers, like Neil Baer from Law & Order Special Victims Unit, Warren Late, and others, and Renee Balser from Law & Order on this program. Dick Wolf, if you hear this, we want to do an hour with you. We're waiting. We've been trying to get you for years, and anytime you like, come on the program. We'd love to have you. So that's my pitch for Dick Wolf. Let's get to FBI True. And how did the program come about, and how to get to Paramount Plus?
So it came about, Craig Turk, my co-creator, and I actually met back in 2017. As I mentioned, Dick and I sold FBI to CBS. We had no script. We had no writer. So it was a little bit reverse engineering. So Craig was hired by Dick to write the show, and he came to New York to spend time with me to learn the Bureau so he could, you know, build the foundation for the show. And the first night that he arrived, I actually set up a dinner at the Palm restaurant for him and some other agents and task force partners so that he could begin to learn about this world in a more relaxed setting. We continued to do the briefings in the boardroom and in the office, but that's just a stiffer environment. And so I continued to also set up dinners and cocktails where the ties would loosen up and the shirt sleeves would, you know, get rolled up, and he was really kind of getting the laid back, casual version and seeing how agents react with each other. So after we did a documentary called The 26th Street Garage, the FBI's Untold Story of 9/11, which is streaming on Paramount Plus, and it debuted on the 20th anniversary of 9/11, people were really responding to hearing agents tell the story, and we thought we should do more of this. And Craig brought up the fun format of the experience he had meeting agents in the bar. And we thought, oh, agents in a bar. What would that look like? Maybe there's an agent host. So we interviewed several female agents, and two of them were so outstanding that we couldn't choose between them, so we chose two co-hosts. And then Don Borelli, the owner of the bar that we film in, the Arts and Crafts Beer Parlor, is a retired FBI boss in New York. And I approached him and I said, could we use this as a venue? It's a bar that agents love to go to. It's a beautiful setting in New York. And that's kind of the genesis of how FBI True came to be.
And FBI True just started second season earlier this month on Paramount Plus, today on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. And we are speaking with the co-creator and executive producer of the program, former FBI Special Agent Ann Biegun. She joins me live from Beverly Hills, California, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Sam Alamo with you, still in New York, the other side of this wonderful land. 60 degrees at the bottom of the hour here in New York. And if you have a question or comment for Ann, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. If you just came in, this is the first of four episodes this week of the program All About TV's Current and Future. We're on today, tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday. Don't miss tomorrow's episode if you can. Big 9-minute episode from The new National Geographic special, Charles, in his own words, Emmy Award-winning producer Tom Jennings will lead off the program. Then we will have the president and chief executive officer of CuriosityStream. It started as one service, now it is a nonfiction empire with all sorts of different avenues. Clint Stinchcomb, the former Discovery Channel executive, will be with us. And finally, the executive producer and director of The Flight Attendant, Emmy nominated, by the way, for that series. Now she is the executive producer and lead director of the new miniseries, A Small Light. It's the Diary of Anne Frank miniseries that you've never heard about, but you will, starting on May 1st on Nat Geo, Disney Plus, and Hulu. Susanna Fogel, DGA Award winner, Emmy Award nominee. She is with us live tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, 90-minute edition of Tuavi Televised, right here. So be with us and be involved. And what are some of the key episodes that are on the second season of FBI True?
Some of the key episodes of the second season are the Boston bombing episode, Gangs of Newburgh, which is a beautiful story about how an agent changed the landscape of a gang-infested town in Newburgh, New York. Mob Cops is another incredible story. The Outlaw Motorcycle Gang. I mean, they're all great. Those are some of my favorites, though.
Tell us about the Marathon bombing episode, because we just had the 10th anniversary memorial of that event in Boston over a week ago. In fact, 1 week ago today. What kind of reaction have you had to that episode, and what was it like to revisit that situation?
The reaction has been positive. Having a task force partner from Watertown, the Watertown Police Department, join the SAC, Rick Delorier and Nancy Patterson, who was an agent out of the Washington field office, was a nice combination that really highlighted how the partnership worked back during that time to help resolve the case. Filming the episode was difficult. Any traumatic event like that, when an agent revisits it, it's gonna draw back the emotion from that time, and lives were lost, and it was a horrible day that changed our country forever. So it was a tough story to tell, but an important story to tell. And again, highlighting the partnership was something that was really important for us to focus on.
Mm-hmm. The conversations that you have on these different situations at the Arts and Crafts Beer Parlor, how do they trigger how else you cover or the series covers a particular situation? What kind of information do you access? Is there anything that's out of bounds? How do you factor all of that information into each episode?
Nothing's out of bounds. I mean, the cases that we focus on, of course, are adjudicated. The FBI can't talk about anything that's ongoing. So these are things that have already played out in court. The show has evolved in that some of the response that we got, especially when we started showing the viewer who these agents were that are telling the story, not just the host with the background of what the host has done in their career, but the guests, people were really responding to that. And so we rolled up our sleeves a little bit and started to tell more of who these people are. We also throw viewers kind of right into the boiling pot. We don't, we have a 30-minute format, so it's quick kind of wave tops of what these stories are. So we look for stories that can be told in that format, whether it's a story you've heard before, like the Boston bombing. We look to tell an aspect of the story that hasn't been told before, or we look for stories that you haven't heard at all. It was also exciting to be able to put in video and audio from some of these cases that has not been publicly revealed prior.
Mm-hmm. From the first season, was there any particular episode that either was surprising in terms of what it was like to produce that episode or the audience reaction to it?
Probably it's called The Boy in the Bunker. It's the name of the episode. It's a double episode. It's the last two in the lineup of season one. And that was a truly unbelievable 6-day-long standoff between the FBI and all of our specialty components and a really bad man who took a little 5-year-old boy hostage after killing the school bus driver. And I think people's reaction to that story was surprising. I mean, I shouldn't have been surprised because I know the story and I get emotional every time I hear it. But we saw the public's reaction to be, you know, exactly that and more. It was a really emotional story, especially for those involved.
Mm-hmm. In addition to working with Craig and your production company, you also have other production companies that are working with us. There's a Canadian company called Ephraim Films out of Canada. You're also working with the folks at CBS News through their See It Now studio. Susan Zirinsky, who was at one point the president of CBS News, American University graduate, like yours truly, the model for Broadcast News, that famous movie. What was it like working with people like her and the other production companies, and all of you like working under the same vision or the same vision umbrella, if you will?
Yeah, it was incredible. So Craig and I actually brought the idea for the 26th Street Garage documentary to Susan back in 2019, and she was fierce about making sure that that got made. I mean, it was the height of COVID. It was super challenging. She was also transitioning out of that position at CBS into running her own now studio. And she brought in Sean Efron as our partner, and together the four of us produced that documentary, and it was such a rewarding experience that really contributed to what else can we do together. So, yeah, Susan is fierce. Sean is an incredibly talented filmmaker, and, of course, Craig Turk needs no introduction. So it was really kind of a dream team in terms of production, and we transitioned that into FBI True, which we hope goes for many, many more seasons.
We're speaking with the co-creator and executive producer of FBI True and Paramount Plus. That is Ann Biggin. She joins me from Beverly Hills, California, this half hour on Smart Be Televised. Happy you're with us this Monday afternoon, kicking your week off with a program about TV's current and future. First of four episodes this week. Tom Knapp, I'm with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment on our remaining minutes with Ann, make a call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We've got our classic trivia question coming up. If you missed it when we had it in our first half hour, we're going to repeat in our second half hour. And then coming up at the top of the hour, we'll have our tribute to Len Goodman, the former judge on Dancing with the Stars and its predecessor in England, Strictly Come Dancing. If you haven't heard the news, he passed away over the weekend at the age of 78 from complications of bone cancer, which he had had for several years. And we'll have a special tribute to him in our final half hour. Plus, our regular feature is Show to Know. There's a series that got its second season off the ground last night on HBO. We actually told you about it. We had the producers of the program on a year ago, January. So that's coming your way also in our final half hour. So stay tuned for that. And if you haven't heard the news, Friday on Smart Be Televised, our final episode of the week, we will have the co-founder and chief executive of Series Fest, the biggest TV festival in the land from Denver, Colorado. Kicks off May 5th. Randy Kleiner will have her annual interview with us. That's coming up this Friday, 3 PM Pacific. And next month we will have, as our annual tradition, we'll have some of the key independent pilot winners of the program, like with Best Drama, Best Comedy, Unscripted, etc. That's all coming your way next month here, 3 PM Eastern, noon Pacific, live from Denver and elsewhere here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And how do you see the way the FBI has been dramatized from, let's say, when the FBI – the Quinn Martin series from Warner Brothers that ran 9 years on ABC with Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. in the lead role as Inspector Lewis. How do you find that the dramatic depictions of your former agency have evolved over the decades on television?
The dramatic depiction, you know, of course, is fictionalized. The one thing about the Bureau that I would like to inject into the stories that I'm telling is that we aren't first responders, and FBI cases are slow burns. They take weeks, months, years to investigate. Obviously, that's challenging in a one-hour format. You have to overly fictionalize the pace and what you will, but, you know, the narrative of the FBI is told accurately. I mean, it's the greatest law enforcement agency in the world. And I think that the way it's evolved in television and film is incredibly positive for the Bureau and entertaining.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting when I watched early episodes of the FBI, grew up in that show, that initially Quinn Martin and his production team tried to humanize Erskine's character, Ephraim Zuni's character, by showing his daughter, played by Lynn Loring, and some of his life away from the Bureau. But ultimately, it became, even that first season, it became more the case, and case, and that's where it ended. And then future shows like Today's FBI and Mancuso, and even the current iterations with Dick Wolf's shows, it's still the case, although he does try every now and then to slip in a character development. You know, this person's character goes this way in his life, off the FBI, and so on and so forth.
Yes, that's correct. I think I'm uniquely positioned as an insider to inject that personal narrative into the stories because, you know, the FBI is not made up of robotic humans that don't have emotions and feelings and loss and love and life, right? They're incredibly flawed. Like, we're humans. We're fallible, complex, and very diverse characters. I mean, the FBI attracts incredibly talented folks from all walks of life, and they have incredible personal stories to tell, and there's also a ton of human emotion in the Bureau, and you see that when you come together on a big case and how it impacts people differently, and there really are some beautiful human stories to tell, and I think I'm uniquely positioned because I was an insider. The Bureau isn't great about sharing with the world, you know, what it's like on the inside, and so again, because I was on the inside for 23 years and now I'm producing and running a production company in LA, I think I can really inject a human element in a way that others can't.
So when you're not doing FBI True, what activity are you doing with your production company in terms of either getting shows on the air or developing shows?
So I've got several TV shows in development. They're in the deal-making phase, and a feature film is in the same phase, but unfortunately I can't share with you. I'd love to come back on your show when I can talk more about them. But I'm also developing I have over 24 projects on my slate, all based on real stories. I've optioned 9 books written about cases or by agents. And so all of those things take a time to develop and get to kind of a pitch deck or an outline phase where I can then take it to a writer as a partner or a producer or even a studio. And it's been really exciting to see all of the stories kind of flood my way from folks inside the Bureau as they've learned about what I'm doing in this industry because I'm a family member to them and they trust me with their stories. I've often observed that agents would rather have their story not told than told inaccurately or irresponsibly. So it's really an honor that they trust me with these precious stories from their careers.
Has the experience with Dick Wolf and FBI and the success that that series and its spinoffs have had, is that encouraging you that, you know what, maybe I should do my own scripted series, whether the subject matter is FBI or otherwise?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, the two shows that I mentioned I just can't talk about that are in the deal-making phase are exactly that. They're scripted shows based on real entities within the FBI, and I'm really excited to share more with you when I can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How does it look in terms of getting that deal done? Is it close? Is it still in development cycle? Where do things stand?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. And now with this, you know, potential writer strike, that'll be a little bit of a monkey wrench for all of us to deal with. But it's hard to tell. You know, the lawyers and the agents will, have their contribution, and hopefully we can move it along quicker. And I am very excited. I wish I could tell you more, but I'm excited to come back on when I can. Hopefully that's in the distant, not too distant future.
Yeah. Are you keeping an eye on what is going on with the writer's strike? You get a sense from what you've been saying, what's been reported, is that nobody wants a strike. Nobody wants a strike. That's one. Two, if there is a strike, everybody walks out in the production community, writers, directors, producers, cinematographers, actors, et cetera, et cetera. And three, you're getting a sense that because there is a news blackout, and we're not hearing too much. It's like no news is good news, that there's this sense here that, you know, everybody is taking as much time as possible on both sides of the negotiating table, writers and producers, to get a deal done, to listen to each other. Is that what you're hearing?
Yes, and I'm with you. Nobody wants this. I really hope it doesn't happen. I think it would be terrible. And, you know, we're just coming out of this COVID, just horrible experience that we all had, and we're getting back into the swing of things again. And it would just be terrible. It would be terrible for the whole industry, and it would just impact everybody. And let's hope that it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. So final question before you go, Anne. If we go season 3 with FBI True, what cases would you like to make sure are on that lineup of episodes?
What cases would I like to see? I'd like to see some more, you know, public corruption, civil rights, some of the unique things that only the FBI investigates, which a lot of people don't appreciate. I'd like to see some more international stories told. I think it's important for people to understand that it's not the CIA that's just overseas, that the FBI has a huge global footprint and what that's about. And then just more compelling stories that haven't been told, or stories that you have heard of that you haven't heard this aspect of. I think that's what we're shooting for.
Season 2 of FBI True, now playing on Paramount Plus, available on smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles, one way or the other, where you are. For more details about the series online, go to www.paramountplus.com. It's www.paramountplus, that's plus, not the plus sign, the plus word, paramountplus.com. FBI True, now in Season 2 on Paramount Plus. Anne Biggin, thank you very much for coming aboard. Congrats on your new production company. Congrats also on where you're at with FBI True. Hopefully more seasons after Season 2. And, yes, come on back anytime. You've got new projects in the works. We'd love to hear about them. And it's been a pleasure having you on.
Great. Thank you, Simon. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome, Anne. Take care. Have a super week.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Anne Biggin, joining us live from Beverly Hills, California. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. If you just came in over the last half hour, we're going to repeat the question we did it the first half hour. We'll do it again. And if you are first with the correct answer, it's our second week offering the question, you will get the wonderful new book by former guest on this program, Herbie J. Pilato. He is one of the best writers covering the world of television. He's done so many books and so many different TV subjects. His latest book from Headline Books is called Retroactive TV, an in-depth perspective on classic television, social circuitry. Had a chance to read over the weekend. It is marvelous. Lots of great pictures, too. Covers all sorts of wonderful TV shows and their impact on society since. You can get that book right now if you know the answer to this question. Name the 1978 NBC miniseries co-starring Robert Conrad, Richard Chamberlain, Sally Kellerman, and David Janssen. Name the 1978 NBC miniseries co-starring Robert Conrad, Richard Chamberlain, Sally Kellerman, and David Janssen. Two more clues. It's history-oriented, and B, it is based on a James Michener novel. History-oriented, and it's based on a James Michener novel. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. First person with the correct answer, that person wins Retroactive Television by author Herbie J. Pilato. If we don't get a winner by the end today, post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. And remember, if you are a previous winner or a guest on this program, you are not eligible. One last time, here is the question. Name the 1978 NBC miniseries co-starring Robert Conrad, Richard Chamberlain, Sally Kellerman, and David Janssen. For the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Get in there and win today, and all the very best. When we come back, we will have a final tribute. We scored a 10 for Dancing with the Stars judge Len Goodman, who passed away over the weekend at age 78. Plus, our show to know is an HBO series that we first told you about a year ago, January. It got great critical acclaim, considered one of HBO's best shows of 2022. And last night, it came back for Season 2. All coming up after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You're listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com, together reaching over 80 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out CRS Radio, this episode all about the Legends of Motown, taking place tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on VTR. That's CRS Radio, Motown Legends episode, tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, Best VTR, always available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the Marby Televised on this Monday afternoon, the 24th of April, 2023. And welcome to those who are just joining us at the top of the hour. Tom Allen with you live from Nueva York. Happy to have you aboard. And this is the first of four episodes we're doing this week. We are back tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, all at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, with wonderful guests we expect coming your way each and every episode. Coming up this half hour, we'll have our special tribute to Len Goodman of Dancing with the Stars fame. We'll have our show to know, and we'll kick things off with News Note Quickies. Apple TV Plus will bring back Eugene Levy-hosted series The Reluctant Traveler back for a second season. Not coming back, truth be told, that's the Octavio Spencer starring series after three seasons. We had one of the executive producers on the program earlier this year. You can catch that episode at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised on podcast, and our webpage, tomorrowbetelevised.com. More than 5 million people watched the 2023 Latin American Music Awards this weekend through Univision, Unimas, Galavision, Simulcast. Walmart stores are now offering a smart TV plug-in device powered by the Google TV operating system. The price, $20 per unit. Netflix's zero-day miniseries, the first miniseries with Robert De Niro as star and executive producer, has Lizzie Kaplan, Jesse Plemons, Joan Allen, and Connie Britton, all Emmy or Academy Award-winning nominees, or Academy Award nominees, I should say, as co-stars. Comcast and smart TV set Vizio will carry a new ad-supported channel featuring videos from 9-year-old YouTube fave Like Nasta. Playworks will distribute the service to other smart TV and cable platforms, and it may have interactive games on that service. New Disney Plus hip-hop musical comedy flick World's Best will debut there June 23rd. And True Detective creator Nick Pizzolatto is on board Prime Video's plan to turn classic film The Magnificent Seven into a TV series. You may remember that CBS presented a seven series from 1998 to 2000, lasting 22 episodes. And that is News Notes for today. Some of you out there in our listening public may know that that talking about the world of television is one of my self-expressions. The other major one is ballroom dancing and flamenco. I've been doing it now for over 30 years. And one of the inspirations for doing ballroom dancing has been Dancing with the Stars. That's the weekly variety, live variety series that really has been a boom to showing America what ballroom dance is all about. You may also remember that it was based on a predecessor series that started a year before from the BBC called Strictly Come Dancing, headed by the great Bruce Forsyth as the host. Tom Bergeron, of course, was the host of the original. Then it became Tyler Banks. And this year, it'll be this coming year, it'll be Julianne Hoge and Alphonse Ribeiro that will share the hosting duties. Well, from start to near finish last year, Len Goodman was one of the three judges on Dancing with the Stars, and before that, one of the original judges for many, many years on Strictly Come Dancing. In case you haven't heard, over the weekend, Len Goodman passed away in England at a hospice, surrounded in his last minutes by his family and friends, at the age of 78. When I learned about the news early today, I was shocked, and I got the chance to learn a lot about Len Goodman beyond seeing him each and every week on Dancing with the Stars. A couple of thoughts, first of all, about Len, particularly for those of you who never saw Dancing with the Stars. You might say he was the tough cookie, the tough love person of all the judges on the program, along with Bruno and Carrie Ann Nava, Juliette Howe, who now will be a co-host this coming fall, and so forth. When you heard Len Goodman speak, you heard a professional who knew what the heck he was talking about and what the heck he was judging. He sometimes exhibited tough love on celebrities. He had high standards, and he was empowering. He told the celebrity contestants, here's what to watch out for. Here's what to work on. He was very, very compelling. And there's a very good reason why, because he was one of the great ballroom dance champions in England in his teens, 20s, and 30s. And he later became a very big judge on ballroom dance competitions in that country and all over the world, including Blackpool, which, if you know your ballroom dancing, is the Super Bowl of that sport. Some would call it a sport. Some would call it a performance art. Whatever you call it, Blackpool was the major world competition where anybody who's anybody in ballroom dance was there, and probably Len Goodman was judging or teaching. However, Len on Dancing with the Stars was special because you knew, whether you agreed or disagreed with him, you knew that he had a great love of dance, great love of ballroom, always looked for people doing innovative things, not just the status quo, and like I said, was very empowering on the contestants. If you got a 10 from Len anytime during the competition, on any episode, you knew that you had raised yourself to a great level, not just in dance, but in life as well. And it really took something to get a 10 from Len Goodman, 10 being, of course, the top score, 0 being the bottom score. And his fellow judges loved him. Bruno had a wonderful tribute early this morning, a social media post. I haven't heard from Carrie Anava yet. I'm sure we will before the end of the day. But Len was just one of those people that you definitely wanted in the ballroom dance world to know. And I wish I could have had him on this program. I wish I could have, we did have Conrad, the original executive producer of the program, on this program many years ago. And I wish we could have had Len, because he was incredibly articulate. From what I understand, he was someone who never missed an opportunity to talk to somebody about ballroom dance or about how he judged the contestants, or just how he got involved with the field in the first place. He was very, very, very approachable. He wasn't stuffy. He may have looked stuffy. He wasn't. Far from it. And I think that's why Len, who also had a wry sense of humor, why he clicked with fans as well as the contestants and Tom Bergeron and all the hosts and co-hosts and so forth. Because you just knew you were going to get a whale full of great knowledge and very accurate pinpoint judging from Len Goodman. And that's the same thing with his work on Strictly Come Dancing, too. We didn't know, and I didn't know certainly until today, that for the last few years, Len was dealing with bone cancer. When Len decided that last fall, the first fall on Disney Plus, would be his last on the series, he said at the time that he wanted to spend more time with his family and his grandchildren and his fellow countrymen in England. And now I understand why. Maybe he thought, maybe he, in the back of his mind, or maybe in the front of his mind, knew that this was the time to go. And this was the time to spend his last days with the people he loved most and loved him back. And like I said, when it was time to depart this world, or whatever world he's dealing with now, Len was surrounded by his family and wonderful friends. They made sure that he got a 10 in departing this world. I will definitely miss Len Goodman on Dancing with the Stars or any television showcase that presents ballroom dance. He was a giant in the ballroom dance field. He was a giant in terms of contributing to the quality and the liveness and the aliveness of Dancing with the Stars. And I hope that whoever takes that seat this fall, that they'll live, if not duplicate Len Goodman, because you can't, nobody will, but you can bring your expertise and your commitment to being great as a judge to the commitment he had as not just a judge, but a wonderful factor in the great longevity of Dancing with the Stars, first on ABC, and hopefully with many more seasons to come on Disney Plus and elsewhere. Len Goodman passed away this weekend, Saturday to be specific, at the age of 78. We'll miss you, Len. And one more time, here's a 10 for you. And now it's time for our regular feature, A Show to Know, where we highlight a program that we think is worth your while to tune in and catch. And you might not know about it because it's either not well marketed, promoted, publicized, or it falls under the radar screen of critics and journalists. A year ago, January, HBO premiered what turned out to be one of its best comedies of 2022, an original series called Somebody Somewhere, We were delighted to have the executive producers and creators on this program in January. And if you don't know what the show is about, it's about a woman who decides to come back to his or her hometown in Kansas, played by Bridget Everett, who's a comedian and a singer. And in this series, she is the star and one of the executive producers. And she decides to deal with resuscitating her career in Kansas as a singer and finding out that there's a lot about her hometown that can bring her spirit back up from even the toughest elements of life. It's a terrific program. I saw the first episode in its entirety. Everett was wonderful. Subsequent episodes were terrific. I really had hoped that Everett would get an Emmy Award nomination for Best Actress in a Comedy. Turned out she didn't. She was certainly in the running. Maybe this year she will be. Because last night, HBO premiered the second season of Somebody Somewhere, and it looks like it is picking up from where it left off, which is just plain superb. Everett is surrounded by a wonderful supporting cast, terrific writing and directing crew, headed by Hannah Boss and Paul Thoreen. The Duplass brothers are involved also, and Everett does some of the writing as well. And Jay Duplass, incidentally, is one of the directors. If you haven't seen Somebody Somewhere, I hope you'll make it your business to do so. It's a marvelous program, and it showcases a portion of this nation and a culture of this nation that really should be represented more on television than it is. It's human, it's humane, it's funny, it's melancholy. It's a wonderful comedy and dramedy in every sense of the word, and Bridget Everett's performance is absolutely wonderful and should, this time around, get nominated for an Emmy, Best Actress in a Comedy Series. You can catch episode 2 of Somebody Somewhere this Sunday night at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on HBO, and it will also be streamed either or it will be presented at the same time period or later on HBO Max, available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. Check your locals where HBO is available in your area on cable and satellite. And for more details about the program online, go to HBO.com. That's HBO.com. Now, is there a television show that you like that doesn't get enough attention from anybody? Well, that's one of the purposes of this program and this particular feature. We want to give it the attention. And the only way we can do that is if you communicate with us about the program. Give us the information, who's in it, how long it's been running, so on and so forth, why you should care and why we should care about it. And you do that by emailing me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Or you can use social media. I'm available on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Facebook and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum, and Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, if we use your suggestion on the air, you, yes, you and you, and especially you out there, get the credit. So get in there and email me, and who knows, maybe we'll have a show to know that you like in an upcoming episode of this program. And again, one last time, Somebody Somewhere, episode 2. That's this coming Sunday night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on HBO, and presented either same day, same night, et cetera, on HBO Max, available on smart TV sets, device, and multi-channel bundles, and in some cases, through your local cable or satellite operator. Well, I want to thank all of our guests for being here today and all of you for tuning in. Like I said, this is the first of 4 episodes we're doing this week, and incidentally, why we are doing these 4 episodes, why we're doing 4, we haven't done this in a long, long time. We usually do up to 3 in a week, is because next week is the annual Digital Content New Fronts put on by the Interactive Advertising Bureau. And they're taking place here in New York, mostly in person, some virtual sessions, May 1st to the 4th. Yours truly will be covering these sessions for Media Village, the Media Leadership website. So yours truly is to be going to a session or 2, coming back and writing, session or 2, back and writing, and so on and so forth. I'll be doing stories throughout, probably through the week and even into the weekend. So I hope you'll check the coverage. It's starting on Monday, hopefully, or Tuesday at the latest, at MediaVillage.com. It's www.MediaVillage.com. Incidentally, on Wednesday, we will be covering Byron Allen's wonderful trip to New York with his Allen Media Group. He's got an upfront lunch event taking place near Rockefeller Center. We'll be covering that. And hopefully Thursday or Friday of this week, we'll have the all about that at our home at MediaVillage.com. So be sure to check in on that. And we will also be inviting Byron to come on this program down the road. If we do, we'll do an hour with him. And we'll also talk to some of the people at the Digital Content New Fronts for coming on future episodes of this program. Incidentally, also another incidentally, we are going to have, we are trying to have David Cohen, the head of IAB, on this show either this Thursday or Friday. We're working on that. If we get that person, we will let you know. And we're also following the Writers Guild situation. We are 1 week away from a possible strike that's supposed to happen May 1st, same day as the start of the New Fronts, of a strike involving the Writers Guild of America and the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers. It's very clear, as I mentioned in the interview with Ann Vegan, that A, nobody wants a strike. B, there is a real resolve to try to get a deal done. And C, if there is a walkout, it's not just writers. It is producers. It is film editors or tape people, cinematographers, directors, actors, etc. This, it will be a major strike by everybody in support of the writers. And hopefully that will not come to pass. Or if they have to go past the deadline, they do. You get the sense the negotiations are being really well handled. Nobody has left the table. No news is good news. And more importantly, everybody is listening. From what I understand, the talk so far over the last couple of weeks has been very constructive. People are listening to each other. There's no hardening of positions, and that's a good sign. So we will keep in touch throughout the week about the Writers Guild situation. If there's any breaking news, we'll have it for you in our News Notes section or News Notes Quickies. And hopefully, keep your fingers crossed, a week from today, no strike. And things go, in terms of a relationship between the writers and producers, to a whole new great level. Again, tomorrow on Tomorrow Be Televised, 90-minute edition for you, we'll have, starting off with Emmy Award-winning producer Tom Jennings. His latest work is the Nat Geo special this Friday night, Charles, in his own words. Then, the President and Chief Executive Officer of Curiosity Stream, Clint Stichcom, an Inner Radio exclusive. And finally, the Executive Producer and Lead Director of the new Nat Geo Disney Plus and Hulu miniseries, A Small Life, Susanna Fogel, Emmy Award nominee for The Flight Attendant. And she also is a DGA, Directors of America winner, for her directing work on that HBO Max two-season series with Kaylee Cuoco. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcasts. They're available 24/7 anytime you like on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Our Radio Podcast Network, iTunes, Acast, Odyssey, and other great podcast locations. And we're talking to other podcast sites as we speak about joining our wonderful family. Plus, you can also catch us anytime you like on our webpage, tomorrowbetelevised.com from On Podium. That's tomorrowbetelevised.com on Podium. Love to hear from you. What do you think about our episode today? What's your thoughts, by the way, about the possibility of a writer's strike involving major television work? Also, what's your thoughts about what happened over the last 24 hours with Tucker Carlson and Don Lemon leaving CNN and Fox News and CNN, respectively, about Jeff Shell and his exit from NBC Universal as the chief executive of that organization, as well as Jonathan Katz leaving Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment after joining that organization just last August? Love to hear from you. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, that's how you get involved in our Show to Know feature, as well as our Classic Trivia Question of the Week, where you could win the new book, Rick Like the Television, by Herbie J. Pallotto. Remember, you can either email me or find me on social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. However you get involved, we get involved back with you within 24 hours. That's our promise to you. We've had it from the get-go. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager. Jay Sonnenberg is head of content. Website serves by On Podium, the Internet's great podcast outpost. Guitarist Bacon is our web coordinator. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Thanks for supporting the program All About TV's current and future, however you do. We'll be back tomorrow, 90-minute edition, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune and Radio, and all of our podcasts and web destinations. Whatever you're doing to now and tomorrow afternoon, please make it safe and make it great for you and others you love. And again, Len Goodman, we'll miss you, and here's one more 10 for you. Till the next time, stay well and stay tuned.